Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Hey, it's our monthly recap episode as we look back at the top news stories in Brooklyn real estate on How's New York, and we'll be right back with Bob.
Over journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn.
Hey, welcome to How's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. It's our monthly recap episode as we're looking back at the top news stories from Brooklyn real estate from the month of October. And here, as always, is our host, Robert Howe.
Well, thank you, Jason, and welcome everyone to How's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and as always, we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace, of Rising Tide Marketing. And as Jason mentioned, this is our October monthly recap, and only 2 months away, Jason, from our yearly end-of-year recap. Yes. It was just January yesterday.
Yep. Yep, it flew by. It did fly by. And being October, we're got all the Halloween activity going on now. The Owl's Head Park, haunted walk with Marty Golden. We just had the Ragamuffin Parade in Bay Ridge. And I looked for scary news in Brooklyn real estate, but I couldn't find anything scary. All I could find was some pretty positive news once again.
Yeah, once again, yes, no. Once again, you've done a great job of finding articles that are all great for Brooklyn. But it's sort of same old, same old. It's Brooklyn's the best, Brooklyn's the hottest, Brooklyn's the best and getting better. I don't know how that can happen. Brooklyn is expanding. Brooklyn's going to be is great and it's going to be better. It's just endless stories of Brooklyn. Where I guess we're easy picking for all of those writers who are having a little writer's block or looking for something interesting, to write. It's like I always mention the women's magazines you see out there always have the topic on the front page: lose 50 pounds in 1 week. And I guess that's what happens in the real estate market when you get a little writer's block or there's nothing really hot happening on the market. They say, Brooklyn's hot, and let's write about that. So that's what the headlines are screaming once again in the month of October 2018. So what do you have for us?
Well, that seems to be true from a lot of different sectors, including investing, home sales. We're going to talk about luxury home sales, and we're going to talk about commercial properties. But first, we're going to lead off with a story that was a pretty big story. It appeared all over the place. A lot of different media outlets really honed in on this story. We're going to be looking at it from Bloomberg, but it was picked up all over the place. This was a recent report or an annual ranking by PwC and the Urban Land Institute placed Brooklyn at number 2 among the most desirable U.S. markets for property investment. So I guess that's a little bit different than, strictly being a place where everyone wants to move to and live and own. You know, this is a property investment, and it comes in just behind Dallas-Fort Worth. And apparently it's the first time Brooklyn's cracked the top 10 in this list, and that seems a little surprising, but yet when you take into consideration the specifics of this ranking, it's still impressive.
Yes, and before we start gushing about Brooklyn, number 1 is Dallas-Fort Worth, which is sort of a cities without boundaries. It's just sort of morphing. If it needs more land, it just keeps expanding, and everybody calls. Then there are no suburbs. It's just Dallas-Fort Worth, and then the country, the rest of Texas. So yes, that was, is, and still hot, and will be hot. Very moderate, I shouldn't say moderate climate in July and August. It gets up to over 100 degrees. But probably they've been known to have a few tornadoes passing around in that area. But otherwise, we're not talking about any nor'easters, which we're going to get this weekend. We're not talking about monster dumps of snow. So I guess investors and businesses can rely on catastrophic type tornadic activity, investors can rely on relatively stable climate. Now compare that with Chicago, which came in at 32. Both are in the middle of the country, both are hubs. But, Chicago has two things going against it. One, horrible weather. They don't call it the Windy City for nothing. And, when snows come down from Canada, they shoot right for Chicago. And then two, sadly, just the out of control, crime situation, in Chicago. I don't think I don't think that gives investors any sense of security if they know, there's going to be 10 shootings per weekend in the city. So I think that is a major drag on why Chicago is, not up there. But then, you come to Brooklyn. Certainly we're not in the middle of anything. We're on the East Coast. But we do have, we still have a good amount of land to develop, mostly, some along the waterfront and some in the middle of Brooklyn. And I guess that's attractive to investors. The weather is okay, but I think probably what investors are looking at is that there's a young workforce availability, in the area. So, they're building where there are already potential, employees. I don't know what your thoughts are.
That seemed to be a factor in Dallas-Fort Worth's ranking as well. Young workforce, growing influx of new business, favorability to startups, and the top 10, it looks like that's I would say not a running theme, but Nashville, Tennessee, Boston, Denver, Charlotte, a lot of places that are on the rise in terms of young workforce. And it's interesting to see that, Manhattan placed down towards almost the middle of the pack at 32 in terms of ranking on this list. And again, Brooklyn being number two, this is also a hefter. Brooklyn has been on a meteoric rise for years. So for it to be still to rank number two on growth, where we still have growth left to tap into, I think that's a really pretty amazing accomplishment.
Yes, no, it is incredible, and it was my mistake earlier to say Chicago was 32. That would have knocked Manhattan out of the box.
I think Chicago was down closer to 40.
49.
Yeah, 49, that's right.
All right, so Manhattan is still in the running, but Manhattan has run out of land and older buildings, and who might necessarily want to invest in older style buildings? You'd probably have to refurbish the entire place to make it attractive, and then you don't have the community that exists in Brooklyn of younger potential employees. Manhattan is probably what Manhattan is, but Brooklyn is still still expanding, still attracting young people.
And we're going to move into now a story from The Real Deal. This is a story that caught my eye only because wasn't long ago where we were talking about one of the sectors to be hit with a somewhat of a downturn was luxury homes, luxury property, luxury apartments. And this past month, we saw some luxury sales in Brooklyn. There were 8 contracts. They totaled about $24 million. And some interesting places, Carroll Gardens, Park Slope, and a co-op in Columbia Heights, and also a home in Decker Heights. So this does seem to point to at least that we haven't fallen off the map completely, and that there are still luxury sales going on, even though there might be a downturn in that. And I think that might have to do with something with the inventory, not being enough inventory, but also maybe with rising interest rates and a lot of factors going into it. But we still had some pretty impressive, robust luxury sales this past month.
Well, I was reading this article and thinking, of the analogy, there's only so much waterfront property, and the same could be, a parallel here. There's only so much luxury property that when it's coming on the market, people are saying, I'm gonna grab this before it's not there anymore. And of course, you have Carroll Gardens. They have beautiful brownstone buildings. What were multifamilies, people are snapping up and making into one families. They have that big yard in the front, probably about a 40-foot yard in the front, off the street, and a very desirable neighborhood, an older, more mature neighborhood, but still very desirable with just the brownstone style, housing, predominating in most of that area. I'm surprised our neighbor Diker Heights came in the running, and that's unusual. Diker, of course, is known for predominantly one-family homes, some really huge properties, particularly in this vicinity on 83rd Street between 12th and 13th. This is where, for our viewers, listeners, all the holiday lights go up and tour buses come in and people walk around. And so in the month of December, it's really transformed into you know, a tourist destination. But there are some very huge houses up there. And if you want a huge house in the low millions of dollars, I guess Diker Heights, you know, would be the place, you know, to look for that and still have the city feeling. But, you know, you don't have to, you know, be in the middle of, you know, Manhattan to spend your millions of dollars. I also saw a Brooklyn Heights property go. You know, they're grappling now with potentially the BQE renovation there. And someone came up with the idea of the renovation taking over the promenade where people sit and look out over the river onto Manhattan. And I'm just wondering, wow, who thought of that idea and how quickly, you know, the city said, never mind, we're not going to put it up on the promenade. We're not going to put it in your backyard. And I guess for a while, the people that were had properties bordering on the promenade were freaking, thinking that they would have 24/7 tractor trailers going past, you know, right outside their window. So I think that was, quickly shelved. You know, that
already close enough.
Yes, yeah, it is close enough. But and you know, the backdrop here is, you know, the housing market has quieted, partly because of what you mentioned, inventory. And, you know, that's why maybe people are snapping these things up, regardless of the, you know, the slowing market, quieting market. But, you know, overall, the market has got quiet. And the second reason, well, you know, interest rates maybe, although, you know, 4% anything is still, you know, a great rate. But I think there needs to be a slight price adjustment, nothing drastic, but I think buyers now are sensing that they do have a little power in the market, unlike a year ago, and they can now demand, you know, 5%, 10% off of the asking price that, you know, sellers had thought, you know, the sellers were tacking on a couple percentage points per month, you know, as they were thinking about selling their house. Unfortunately, they got stuck in the soft market. So rather than tacking on a few percentage points, now they find themselves having to realize that they have to take off a few percentage points, but still sell their property at great high rates. You know, that's what people forget, is that regardless of what's going on in the economy, that things are still, you know, great. They were there. I don't know what a word is for more great, but I guess a year ago they were more great. Now they're just great. But I guess people want more great rather than just great.
Yeah, that leads into our next story from Bloomberg, and it talks a little bit about that. I do feel it was more great a year ago, and it's still great this time this year, and next year could go back up to being more great rather than less great. It just seems like we're just in a little bit of a I don't know if it's a yo-yoing type of space now, where we're going up a little bit, down a little bit, up a little bit, based on probably what's coming to market. The other outside factors that are pushing in on everyone's bottom line, be it the interest rates, you know, that we see it affecting everything, not just real estate. The stock market has been in flux because of what the Fed's doing, and then also what's going on in foreign, international markets. But this story from Bloomberg is talking about New York City home discounts, and that they're everywhere, and that people are shaving off a couple of percentage points. What I found most interesting about this was, while it does take into account Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Queens, kind of almost like a collective, it's the data that they're giving you, and it points to a lot of really specific numbers.
Yeah, right. And as we mentioned in earlier remarks, you know, people are now asking, and sellers are realizing that in order to make a deal, they're giving, you know, anywhere from 5% up as a discount. Here, you know, this article reflects a 6%, you know, discount. So I think that's a reasonable request from a buyer, you know, in this market to ask any seller, you know, you're going to have to come down a little in the 5 to 6% range, and then let's make the deal, because I think this is the new normal, at least for, you know, the foreseeable future, this whole 5, 6, 7%, you know, reduction in prices. And once again, you know, buyers feel a little empowered. They can point to interest rates and say to the seller, you know, I could have afforded your house at 3%, but now that I'm paying an extra several hundred or several thousand dollars more, you know, what the government and the Fed has taken away from me, I'm sorry, I have to make up, you know, versus you know, your selling price.
And another thing, with all this information about, you know, the discounts and the, you know, shaving off a few percentage points in the final sale price, this takes into account, like, the global numbers from Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, you know, for the quarter that ended in, at the end of September. While we still took off and gave a discount, the change in price from last year, we're still up 2.3%. So we're not losing. We're just, you know, maybe saying, okay, I'll take a little bit less, you know, to make the sale. And it doesn't make sense when we're talking about numbers that big, to spite the sale, you know, for a few, you know, maybe for $10,000 to $20,000 to lose out on a sale. So we're still up, even though we're maybe offering a slight reduction overall.
Right. That's and I think people have to still remember, interest rates are great, at least from the buyer's perspective. Prices are high, still historic highs from the seller's perspective, and it's just not super excellent anymore for anybody, but it is still very, very good. As you point out, everything is still up. We're not in a negative area, and there's really nothing pointing to getting into negative numbers. You know, we're still in positive numbers, which is a fine sign.
And while and the last thing about this study, while Brooklyn and Queens offered discounts in 5 and 6%. I'm sorry, while Manhattan and Queens offered discounts or saw a median discount of 5 and 6%, Brooklyn was, you know, 3.5%. So it was still like Brooklyn, we don't, we're more like
we don't negotiate.
We don't discount.
Yeah, go to Manhattan if you want a discount.
Exactly. And our last story in the October recap deals with commercial real estate and Brownstoner talking about several commercial properties and looking at, you know, comparing them, looking at what each one offers. And when you really, some of them are pretty amazing, the spaces that they're offering, some of these shared corporate parks or these retail spaces or the combined retail / residential spaces. They're pretty amazing. they look like they're Manhattan chic with Brooklyn old world charm combined.
Yes, you know, and this is funny that you picked this article. I happened to be in a Dumbo yesterday. And what struck me, of course, I hadn't been there in a little bit. My memory, of course, of Dumbo was always factories, warehouses, and all the factories and warehouses are still there, except now they're all you know, rentals and condos. And as this article points out, they may have on the first floor some sort of shared working arrangement somewhere else in the building, some recreational space, and another part of the building, maybe a bar, restaurant, place to get food. So, and these, when we're talking about buildings, these buildings are city block big, and they're about 6 or 7 stories high. They're industrial. They have those huge glass windows, floor to ceiling, maybe 10 or 12 foot ceilings. You know, it is crazy that and there is, you know, I never really, of course, they took down some buildings that are still doing renovation, you know, construction and development down there. So you get a different perspective of the landscape when you can see, you know, dozens of these warehouse buildings that have now been turned into luxury rentals and condos with shared workspace and shared amenities. So really, you don't have to go out, you know, outside your building. You can work, play, eat, sleep, do everything in your building, which is, you know, an unusual sort of thought of the you know, the way the American job market and is setting up. I guess everybody has that idea of walking out of your front door early in the morning, going to the bus or the train, or jumping in your car, driving to a building that is all commercial, you know, getting in the elevator, going up to the 12th floor, working at your desk or cubicle or private office. That no longer is happening. They are staying in their own building, and, you know, however they roll out of bed, they're rolling downstairs into a shared workspace, working, and then going back up, you know, to their apartment, staying in that building. The workspace that I was in, the thing that caught my eye, of course, everybody was working, you know, at, you know, long rows of tables, intently staring at their Mac computer. But there was not a phone in the place. There were, unlike the office that we know, that we still think is typical today, phones ringing, everybody's got, of course, a computer, and phones, and they're doing both things simultaneously. This workspace had no phones, and I thought that was really, you know, very strange that people were renting, you know, a little space where they could put their Mac computer and working from that, and that was called a job, and that was their job. So it is unusual, and this trend that you know, we're seeing now of developers either taking over large existing old warehouses that are no longer functioning, you know, in that role, and rewiring them and refurbishing them, or you know, there are Dumbo also had a few really modern looking built brand new buildings. And I guess that's attractive. I guess an important amenity is, you know, maybe, you know, a few years ago, an amenity might have been a pool or a garage. A lot of these people, a lot of the buildings didn't have garages, and bikes all over the place. But a big amenity is, you know, technology and, you know, good wiring. And large windows. I guess that's the amenity that people are looking for. You know, forget the pool, forget the parking lot, or the parking garage. Just give me, you know, good internet access and a lot of light and a little space, and you know, they're good to go. It's a very strange change that we're seeing in you know, Americans' working habits.
Yeah, and like you said, the proximity to where you work, you know, you're living in the area, you're working in the area, or you're biking to the area versus, and there's still the mass transit, but versus driving or carpooling and parking and then, you know, going to work and then heading home. It's the spaces that are here downtown Brooklyn and Dumbo near the Barclays Center, their design with the idea of keeping you there, keeping you in that environment, the amenities that they're putting in, courtyards for food, you know, social spaces, beer garden. They want to have events there so that you're kind of living, working, and playing in the same space.
Yeah, I guess that's going to take a little getting, you know, getting used to.
Yeah.
You know, for I think centuries we all were used to leaving our home, traveling somewhere else to a place you called work, and working there 9 to 5, coming back to a place you called your home, and starting all over again. Now, all of these things have converged in one building, and as you point out, you probably never have to, you know, never have to go outside. But the spaces are very, you know, well done, well appointed, very inviting, a lot of wow factor. But I think every now and then you got to get out on the street and walk around and go somewhere else. But maybe that's not. Maybe I'm being old fashioned.
Well, that takes us to the end of our October episode. If you want to get out and walk around, I guess go trick or treating. Because there was nothing to scare you on this recap. There was all some good news, a lot of positive news still, and nothing scary about Brooklyn real estate. So why don't you take us out, Bob?
Yes, never a scary story about real estate in Brooklyn. That's not going to happen in the near or the far future. But thank you for our October recap, all good stories about Brooklyn. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I'm your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.